You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stukats Podcast.
A couple of movies coming out, Stugatz, that I think you'll have some interest in. Will Smith is going to play King Richard, the father of Venus and Serena Williams, Richard Williams. And also Netflix is making, finally, and this has been in talks forever, everyone has been wanting to make the documentary on the Malice at the Palace. And it was thought, Stugatz, that that was never going to get made because the NBA would never allow the footage to be used. The NBA would never sign off on anybody being able to bring that night back because it was such a blight for the NBA. So I'd really love to know the backstory. I'd love to talk to the directors. I'd like to get to the bottom of how it is. Everybody has been trying to do that documentary for a while now because the personalities are so interesting, but it was thought that that footage was going to be impossible to get.
I'm shocked by it. Do we know if they have the footage? They have to have the footage for the film. I'm wondering, what's changed there? Because I'm with you. I never thought that documentary would be made.
I don't know if it's David Stern passing away. I saw in the trailer had the footage. And I don't know if that's a social media thing. I'd like to know more. I'm speaking ignorantly now when I tell you I simply don't know how they got the footage. And I was of the opinion, because I've heard this talked about for so long, Stugatz, everybody's been wanting to make that documentary. It's an easy documentary to make. We remember that time because we lived through what it is the details were. And nostalgia sports documentaries are where it's at right now, and you're not going to get a more interesting subject matter than millionaire black dudes with cornrows and braids punching the white customers in a way that when it happened, I remember, and we've talked about this before, Stugatz, Stephen A. Smith, the late John Saunders, a bunch of people on ESPN started blaming the fans. The way that we blame the fans now when Kyrie Irving gets a bottle thrown at him or Russell Westbrook gets popcorn thrown at him. And then the conversation changed 10 to 15 hours later. I wonder, was Skipper in charge then? No, that would have been pre-Skipper, right? That was before Skipper. I'd love to know why and how that conversation changed, but it was clear that someone on the very top of Disney or somewhere changed the conversation, because that weekend on the sports reporters, it went from blaming the fans to blaming the players, and the entire tone of the conversation ended up changing over 12 hours from immediate reaction to something decidedly different over the course of the weekend. And I would just love all of that explored.
We all have reasons that we remember that incident. For me, it was Jamal Tinsley coming back onto the court with a dustpan. I mean, and I need answers. I need the backstory on that from Tinsley. I do.
They've got Jermaine O'Neal. They've got Meta World Peace, then Ron Artest. So they're talking to some of the people. And I look forward to watching both of those movies, because I don't think Will Smith's career has been the same since he did Ali. The degree of difficulty on Will Smith's career has been extraordinary. He went from being successful in music, being successful in television, to a performance in Ali that I thought was worthy of an Oscar, and then over the last few years has not been anything special. But he has chosen a project that is super interesting to me because, Stugatz, Richard Williams very much invaded the country club with Compton. I could see how it is that that project would appeal to Will Smith, and I'm looking forward to that. But as we talk about the mixture of race and sports, I want to talk to you guys a little more about what we saw with Simone Biles, because this broke during our show the other day. And then what happened after that was pretty predictable. And Stugatz, it's pretty awful what is happening throughout this country, other countries. You should see how the Kremlin and Russia talk about Simone Biles. I mean, it's super despicable. It's like something out of Aryan Nation. I could read you some of the quotes coming out, like talking to 60 Minutes from the Kremlin on Simone Biles and just how they talk about black athletes. But predictably, Piers Morgan, Chit Stain, Charlie Kirk, all three of those ended up going just the easy place, old white guy going after black athlete, and just repeat, rinse, repeat on that particular formula. But how much have you read about Simone Biles and the specific Stugats of something I'd never heard of before, the twisties? Have you heard of the twisties, Stugats?
Not until recently, not until it actually happened. Whatever happened to Simone Biles, and then everyone started using the term twisties and the mental aspect and her not knowing what she was doing when she was actually out doing the thing that she does best.
In the air, it's the yips for gymnasts. Yeah. And gymnasts know the terminology, and one of the many things at play here, because we can do all sorts of think pieces about all of this, Stugats. This is a woman under a great deal of duress for a lot of reasons that have nothing to do even with the Olympics, the world stage, and things we've seen her conquer before. A brother acquitted of murder, Stugats. You don't know the mental strain of that. A Nassar sexual abuse survivor. You don't know the damage of that. A black person in America competing at this time in an empty arena for that flag. You don't know what's happening there. And we can do all sorts of examinations that study whether or not she quit. And we do these things with absolutes where she only gets to be a hero or a coward, where it can be neither of those things. It could just be somebody saying, hey, when I'm doing 2.5 rotations and I'm in the air, I don't know right now if it's 1.5 rotations and I need to not fall on my neck because I'm someone who gets higher and does this with greater height and athleticism than anyone in the history of the sport. And how about I not hit my neck on the floor, or how about I not land from a great height in a way that's going to damage me, because I simply don't know, because of this thing I'd never heard of, the twisties, whether I've done 2.5 rotations or 1.5 rotations. It can just be that. And then she becomes a symbol, and we do all of the things that we do in America now, where we argue about anything that has to do with race relations. And then there aren't that many. I was pleased, Stugats, to see the number of people who were compassionate to her. Like, the predictable characters took the other side of this and ended up saying a thing about how you don't let down your team, you don't let down your country. I think the most despicable of them was Charlie Kirk, who was talking about how, you know, this is a generation of weak people, and this is shameful for the country, caring about the Olympics and these events only so that you could go after the girl who's feeling, or the woman who's feeling frail.
But Dan, there were a lot of people, and I'm not certain this would have been the case a decade ago, maybe even 5 years ago, that were applauding her, that were calling her a hero. I know you want everyone to do the same thing when situations like this arise, but I think at least we've come, I don't know, I don't want to say a long way as a society, but we've made some progress on that front, where there were people applauding Simone. There were people saying, hey, that was brave. Hey, she's a hero. So there were.
She felt supported. I would say, though, it doesn't have to be all that. She doesn't have to be a hero.
Right.
It doesn't have to be coward or hero, and those are your two choices, and those are your only two choices. There are plenty of exit ramps. It could be just someone taking care of herself because she knows herself and her sport. She knows that sport better than anyone has ever done anything in that sport. She doesn't have anything to prove to us by risking injury if she's feeling like she might harm herself physically.
No, you're right. But I do think there's a level of this, that many people are uncomfortable with mental illness. They're uncomfortable discussing it. They've never been through it themselves. Mike and I talked about this a little bit with David Sampson earlier, where unless you've been through it, Dan, you really don't understand what it is she's going through. I used to mock panic attacks all the time and say, hey, sign me up for millions of dollars, until I actually had a panic attack and realized how crippling it could be. And I don't mock them as much anymore. And I kind of regret that conversation you and I had many, many years ago, where I think I was mocking Butch Davis, saying, hey, sign me up for panic attacks. I'll take them right now if you pay me $5 million a year. So I do think there is a level of, hey, I've never been through it before, therefore I don't understand what it is she is going through. You should probably be more sympathetic and listen to what it is she's saying, or Kevin Love is saying. But there are levels where people have never been through something, therefore they don't know how to discuss it, and so they go to the easiest place, which is, hey, get out there and perform.
She also knows that she has good teammates, and it's almost admirable of her to say, you know what, I'm the GOAT. Every broadcaster can't talk about me without saying the GOAT, but yet, you know what, I don't want to hurt the team. I find it admirable.
Is it allowed to be just neutral? Can it be not heroic or cowardice? Can it not be admirable or condemned? Can it just be someone decided to sit out and we don't need to use the language of quitter and we don't have to make it something more than it is on a world stage under difficult circumstances when everyone has a layer of shit on them from what it is the last year has been? All of this was too much for her and she decided to opt it out, and it's just okay to just say that because she's got more institutional knowledge on what's happening inside of her than any of us. I don't know what a sponsor's supposed to do in this circumstance. I don't know. Is a sponsor just supposed to be supportive and say it doesn't matter whether you win or lose or try or not compete? I don't think she is worthy of condemnation. If I were a sponsor, I would feel now obligated to support her because she is great at what she does. She has been exceptional at what she does for a long time, and she didn't have to prove anything to me. And I was sponsoring her based on all the things that she accomplished in the hope that she would accomplish them again. But if she finished in eighth place because she stumbled, had the yips in the air, and never told anybody about it, and just failed, we would have buried her as being a choker. We wouldn't have taken any of this into account. And furthermore, Stugatz, if she had said anything... Is that in your, that's in Delaware, that sound?
Yeah, sorry, that was Abby walking in, but go ahead. At least it wasn't during something serious, but go ahead. She's quiet now. And now she feels bad. I mean, she's standing in the corner. I'll paint the picture. She just, you know, she was bringing me a little coffee, a bagel, something to nosh on, a little spread. And
cup of Joe.
Yeah, a little cup of Joe. And
Schmear.
And then Schmear. And now she feels terrible. And now she's embarrassed. And now she's... Oh my God, it's my birthday, Dan. I deserve better than this. I mean, Jesus, man. I think you just ruined birthday sex for me.
Bex.
Happy birthday to him. I don't care. Good luck.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan, this is such a tricky situation from this standpoint. I hate saying this. God, I hate saying this. The optics on this are bad. Had she said something on the front end, hey, today's not the day, I can't do this, I can't compete, perhaps more people would have been understanding. When you go out there and you do something and you don't do it as well as we're accustomed to you doing it, and then after that you say, hey, I'm done, I can't do it today. If she stuck the landing there, right, she probably would have continued on with the competition. She didn't. And so the appearance from afar is that, hey, she didn't have it on that particular day, therefore she's going to walk away. I'm not saying that's what actually happened, but the optics are pretty bad.
But she did make news earlier before she competed for basically admitting that she was feeling the pressure of the whole world. So that is kind of saying, like, holy crap, she's acknowledging the pressure she's feeling.
We are just a little bit removed from Mental Health Awareness Month, and I would hope and wish, Dugatz, in this era of unspeakable cruelty, as Michael Bleeping Jordan, Dugatz, you saw these quotes from Michael Jordan?
No, what'd he say?
Quote, for someone like myself, I don't know if I could have survived in this Twitter era, where you don't have the privacy you'd want, and what seems to be very innocent can always be misinterpreted. He's not even talking about the cruelty that people hit you with without all of the information. And I will say again, Stugatz, mental health awareness month or not, go ahead and let Tom Brady sit out the Super Bowl as the guy who's already accomplished it all. You mentioned Mike Evans the other day as a comparison point. This isn't Mike Evans. This is the best ever. Nothing left to accomplish. This is someone we've seen do things we've never seen before. Imagine Tom Brady before the Super Bowl just saying some version of, I don't have it. I can't. I'm not mentally there. I don't know how we'd react to that. I doubt it would be as compassionately as we're reacting to Simone Biles. I don't think it would be as compassionate in America's most popular sport, the gladiator spectacle, all of that stuff. I think that you'd run the risk of it being a lot crueler than what it is that you're seeing now. So I'm happy to see a compassion extended to her and something that feels like support. I legitimately am, but I don't think we have to go flying off to the extremes, either extreme of making her some sort of patron saint for some inspirational think pieces or some sort of coward who quit on her team. It can be somewhere in the middle of there by degrees.
I do think, though, we should have empathy towards male athletes when they come forward with mental health struggles because, as we know, the suicide rates for men are much higher than for women because it is still highly stigmatized among men to admit that they need help. So if it was Tom Brady, I think we should be as empathetic as we are towards Simone Biles.
What do you think, though, Jessica, whether we should be or not? Do you think we would be in the gladiator spectacle of caveman football? What do you imagine? How do you imagine that would have gone right before Chiefs Bucks as America is waiting to celebrate and has the expectations of that day? If Tom Brady says, hey, I'm sorry. I just can't. I'm not mentally right. I'm going to get physically injured out there because I've got the yips.
No, I think we'd all make fun of him. I think that there are plenty of people on Twitter who are making fun of me for saying my defense of Simone Biles yesterday. There's going to be trolls no matter what. I think that we just tend to be more empathetic towards women and female athletes sometimes, but they also still get a ton of criticism and backlash too. So I don't think we're in this perfect world where Simone Biles is going to come away with this as a hero, but if Tom Brady did it, he'd be a villain. I think both are being villainized by a lot of people, and some people look up to Simone Biles, and I think some people would look up to Tom Brady if he did it.
I agree. But imagine Tom Brady now, Dan, goes into the game, starts the Super Bowl, has three terrible passes, and then takes himself out of the Super Bowl. That's the optics I'm talking about. That's where it gets really ugly for Tom Brady. Or it would.
But when you talk about bad optics, can we in any realm, anybody on our couch with Cheeto dust on our fingers sitting in our underwear, can we really question whether or not Simone Biles has the stomach for that? Her specifically, because the people we're talking about here, and Tom Brady and Simone Biles, have accomplished more than anyone in the history of their sport. So, how can you question if she's telling you that's what it is? Why can't it just be, Stugatz, that's what it is? Because there is no questioning her strength. There's not. There's no questioning her accomplishments, her resume, her ability to summon strength to do it in that moment. We've already seen it time and again. This isn't Paul George or any one of those other people that you can accuse of whatever it is that you want to accuse them of because you haven't seen them do it. We've seen her be the best ever. She's the one who should be most immune to this. She should have the most protection in the history of the sport about this, at least in part because she's got an expertise nobody in the history of doing it has.
There are people questioning it, though, and I think the media is running the risk of letting those people control the narrative moving forward with the story when, at least in my social media and podcast echo chamber, everyone has been saying that what Simone Biles did was really brave. There's still news stories, leading local news or cable news saying all of this backlash is happening too. And I don't know. I just think we can ignore those people at this point because I don't think they matter.
Dan,
there is that element to what have you done for me lately? There is that element with sport fans. I'm not saying that this is my reaction to it, but I could see how a sport fan would say, hey, you quit on the U.S. gym team. You know, the U.S. gymnastics team. You quit on them. You quit. You went out there. You did it. You weren't performing well. You quit on the team. I could see that. I could see a fan saying that.
I suppose that that's the language that people are going to use. You want to go ahead and hit her with quit. Any of you who have left work early or didn't have it one day, you're very comfortable accusing someone who is better at what she does than any of us have ever been at anything, accusing her of bad optics and quitting and cowardice and anything else. But that's simply where we are right now on any subject in America where we can fight over it, because what's happened, Stugatz, with the vaccinations and DeAndre Hopkins and Cole Beasley and everything that you see us fighting about, that on the other side of this, Stugatz, no matter how much empathy or compassion you're trying to extend to DeAndre Hopkins and Cole Beasley and people who just don't want to get vaccinated, every argument can be rebuffed by science and facts. Every argument falls apart on the other side of this, and it doesn't stop us from arguing about it. It doesn't stop us from being divided. It doesn't stop us from being infuriated with the other side, Stugatz, because we're two mutations away or three mutations away of there being no solutions or vaccinations that work for what this virus is doing. And then all the work that's already been put in on this front, Stugatz, goes for naught. All of the sacrifices that everyone's made. I know Mike was making jokes about this with trying to recycle straws while an oil company, $119 billion in debt, sets the ocean on fire. But we're close right now because of the stupidity on the other side that can argue against facts, not opinions, that can argue against facts with my father's move of, I don't know about that. Like, no matter what, any argument on the other side of not getting vaccinated can be rebuffed by science and facts. And if we can argue about that, we can fight about anything.
Also, congratulations to Suni Lee, American, who won the all-around gold today. Yeah.
Nice.
You think all those Patriots on Twitter are going to do a congratulation circuit for the new women's all-around, or are they done weighing in on gymnastics now?
She won the all-around, huh?
We don't care at all. We don't care at all. Jessica was sobbing watching the Olympics. Sobbing, Jessica. Why were you sobbing?
Oh, well, according to my replies, it was just because I'm a woman, but I think it was actually because it was a really emotional when Caleb Dressel won the 100 meter freestyle. He won
great.
The gold medal last night, and they like zoomed in his family, and his wife and his mom were crying, and everyone was like freaking out, and he was crying. You could just tell how emotional he was, that he, like Simone Biles, like all these athletes, like they were ready to go to the Olympics last year and then had to put in another 12 months of training in to get to this moment and then to finally win one of the hardest races in swimming, the fastest race, I think. And the emotion in his face seeing his family because they couldn't be there with him in Tokyo, I think was really relatable, because a lot of us, myself included, during the pandemic, we didn't really get to see our families. I still haven't seen most of my family in over a year and a half. And so I can really relate to that, like waiting and waiting and waiting, and the relief of finally being able to do something that you've been training for and being able to not experience it with your family in person, but kind of share that moment with them and connect with them afterwards.
It really was a cool moment, a moment that NBC was not going to miss. The way they zoomed in on the eyes of Dressel, I've never seen a zoom in that close. They were like, we are getting these tears. It was really cool.
Also, we have an Olympian that gets the show. Yeah. And we should praise Bobby Fink,
yeah,
who stole the gold in the 800 meters. At least I think that's what that event is called. he once tweeted out, just received a good luck cameo from Adron McGill and his sizable endowment at Levitard Show. I'm so pumped. There's no question now. Me, gold, collision course. Thanks.
Yes.
Hashtag play the long side of the day.
You should, on behalf of an Olympian. I'm not even sure. We've got a couple of Finks on that team. I thought our Fink, the one that mentioned Ron McGill, actually won a bronze. I didn't think that he won a gold. I thought the gold medalist was a different Fink.
Oh, no. There's a different Fink.
There are multiple
Finks. We don't
Finks
have a gold
here.
Medalist.
There are multiple Finks.
There's a Nick Fink and a Bobby Fink.
That's
oh,
right.
That's a big find for
Who
me.
Who won the gold?
Well, let me rescind My congratulations to Bobby Fink. The only Fink we care about is Nick Fink.
But he's,
sorry.
Regardless, he got a cameo from Ron McGill and did indeed finish third, correct?
Yeah, first or last.
Fifth says, Whittingham says it's fifth, so if you're not first, Jesus. You're last.
Why do you even go?
What an you're embarrassment.
Not, you're not getting a long set of the day.
Stugatz is like from one thing to another.
We'll take you on Mystery Crate.
Don Libertard.
Were you guys building out the A-Rod bathroom of your imaginations? Is that what I heard you discussing during the break?
Towels with an A on them.
You know the thing you slide the toilet paper on? That's a baseball bat.
Hey, like that.
Stugatz.
You think he actually calls it the throne? Probably does.
It's an actual throne.
Yeah. An actual throne.
There's got to be a full-length mirror in there somewhere.
I imagine somewhere in his house he has a replica of David, but with his head on it.
This is the Don Libertard Show with the Stugatz.
If you are dying for NBA draft coverage, this is usually a pretty fun night, if for no other reason than to just see the suits the young guys are wearing and the evolution of fashion in the NBA. Tom Haberstroh, one of our many basketball experts, the one that's sober today, joins us to give us a little bit of NBA draft coverage. The first thing, before any of these draft picks, is there going to be a giant trade tonight with Lillard, with Ben Simmons, with Bradley Beal? Because that's going to get everyone's attention. And I'm not really sure why, but this night seems to be the night where basketball says, hey, we might do this tonight. Not tomorrow, not yesterday. We might do it because of everything happening tonight.
Yeah, Dan, you can expect, I think, at least one big trade tonight. The Golden State Warriors have 7-14 tonight. I don't expect them to keep those picks. Like, I think it's an open secret in the NBA right now that they're packaging those picks along with Andrew Wiggins or James Wiseman to get that big whale, to get that next, whether it's Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal or Ben Simmons. I think Golden State is one of those teams tonight that you have to be watching because I don't think they have much interest at all in developing their 7-14 picks that could help in like 4 years. I think they want to win this year with Stephen Curry, Draymond, and Klay Thompson.
Tom, this to me is the most fascinating part of the draft experience tonight. And whether or not we see the move or merely a move to set up the next big move in a couple of days, I'm all in on what's going on with Golden State. And the rumors are that Klay, Draymond, and Steph have made it known to Warriors brass that they want another whale. They want to package those picks, as you just mentioned, and their target is a perimeter player like Bradley Beal or Damian Lillard. Bradley Beal is probably the more likely of those two players, and I'm like, yeah, that's awesome. Great idea. Is that going to work?
A lot of guards. A ton of shooters.
A lot of guards, and Draymond as your big, and historically Draymond as your big has been some of the greatest lineups in NBA history, but is it going to work with that small a lineup?
Yes, and that's because of Draymond Green, who might be the best defensive big man in the NBA. Like, he is so good defensively, and I think if he's in shape, you can build a really good defense around him just like they did last year. They had a bunch of G League players, like not good defenders out there, and they were a top five defense last year. So I think when you talk about can it work with Damian Lillard and Klay Thompson and Stephen Curry, the difference between that situation and the Nets is that they don't have that defensive player of the year candidate like Draymond Green, and he does so much for you defensively. So I'm very, very less concerned about the fit there with all the ball handlers and shooters than I am with Brooklyn because they do not have a Draymond on that roster.
Guillermo, put it on the poll. Have you ever heard someone utter the phrase very, very less concerned at Lebatard show? Buddy Hield to the Lakers feels like it makes a lot of sense. Just a great shooter paired with Anthony Davis and LeBron James. Does it?
I think it makes a lot of sense. Same thing for the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, Daryl Morey, the analytics god over there, is all about this Buddy Hield, who had, I think, a top three number of early transition three-pointers. That's the stuff that he loves, is getting out in transition, up-tempo, three-point shooting. So if you're going to be, you know, trying to find spacing for Joel Embiid or Anthony Davis, like Buddy Hield, I think, is a really underrated player when it comes to trying to space the floor and get an amazing three-point shooter. Yeah.
What do you make of the asking price for Ben Simmons, the reported asking price?
Look, you have to start there. Is four first rounders, three pick swaps, and a good young player. That's where you start in negotiations. Like, that's how negotiations work. Not every negotiation gets leaked. The terms of this deal that apparently Daryl Morey is asking for is the moon, right? But then they work their way down. So I'm not surprised at all when you have a guy who's an all-NBA player who does not fit well next to Joel Embiid. He might fit well in 28 other franchises. It's just not great with Joel Embiid. So I think it's smart to have that kind of asking price and then whittle it down from there. Like, when GMs go on these calls, they're not saying like, yeah, what's the most reasonable thing you can give me? They're going to come out with guns blazing, and I think that's what Daryl Morey's doing.
Who should go number one?
To me, a lot of everyone is saying Cade Cunningham, and I get it. He's going to be a really solid pro. Oklahoma State guard, big, 6'8", an amazing shooter. I mean, when you talk about the number one pick, you're expecting 4.5 all-stars in their career. 2/3 of number one overall picks become all-stars, and they're not necessarily MVP caliber. They just need to be really good all-star, perennial all-star type players. Chris Webber's a great example there. Can Cade Cunningham become that? I think so, but the idea that he is the next Luka Doncic, or all of these Luka Doncic comparisons I keep seeing out there, has to stop, Dan. It has to stop. He is nothing like Luka Doncic. Luka Doncic, when he was 18 years old, playing amongst grown men, had a 2-to-1 assist-to-turnover ratio and was the MVP of the EuroLeague at like 18 years old. Cade Cunningham just finished OSU as a 6'8 guard who was, you know, handling the ball a lot, had more turnovers than assists last year. 3.5 assists per game, 4 turnovers a game. I don't care how big you are. I don't think you're a point guard at the next level if you cannot have more assists than turnovers. And people might say, hey, look, the supporting cast for Oklahoma State, whatever, like, I'm not too worried about that. Man, like, Luka Doncic comparisons, he's a once-in-a-generation type player. And when you're pointing to this guy, Cade Cunningham, at 6'8", big guard, and saying he's a point guard, man, I don't see it. Luka Doncic just did 36 points per game and 10 assists in the playoffs as a 22-year-old. It is unfair to be comparing this guy, Cade Cunningham, to Luka.
What are draft night pitfalls? What are we looking at here?
This whole like draft workout, like shot lights out at the draft workout, or as we told the story on Mystery Crate a couple weeks ago with Chris Paul and Andrew Bogut. Andrew Bogut was picked number one overall, and they shut down the whole draft process with the Milwaukee Bucks because he basically showed up with a suit and tie on and brought a resume. And after that, they were like, you know what? When this guy is professionalizing the interview, the job interview like that, We're done. We don't even need to look at Chris Paul.
I couldn't believe
Williams.
How stupid that was, Tom. I couldn't believe listening to that Mystery Crate, just how that people admitted to that stupidity. He brought a resume and he wore a suit, so we took him number one. It seemed intergalactically stupid.
I mean, Andrew Bogut had a good career, right? Like, he was a worthy number one pick. It's just the process that I worry about is, you know, Chad Ford, who covered, you know, the draft process for ESPN for over a decade, said the same thing is, time and time again, including himself, Martell Webster apparently shot like 100 for 100 on three-pointers in a draft workout, and everyone swooned. The Blazers were like, shut it down. We're giving up our number three pick. We're going to take Martell Webster. And, of course, he had the career that he had. So many – I mean, it's human emotion. The cognitive biases of seeing a guy, 18-year-old, 19-year-old, shoot lights out in the gym on a good day, like – That is really effective. It's impressionable when someone does that. It's just when you have Chris Paul and Deron Williams waiting in the wings and you shut down the draft process and say, we don't need to see anymore. He brought a resume and did really well in the job interview. That to me seems like not great process there.
We know the Sixers are always going to be aggressive because that's what Daryl Morey does. In fact, they just made a trade right now, sending $2 million for the 53rd overall pick, buying picks, buying things to package to other sort of contracts to inevitably dump. But outside of the Sixers, what is one team that you got your eye on to see if they make a move that signifies they're gearing up to make one of these big trade attempts at Damian Lillard or Bradley Beal?
I think it's interesting what David Griffin did in New Orleans, basically trading away Eric Bledsoe and Steven Adams to clear up cap space for New Orleans. I am worried a little bit that people saw what happened with the Phoenix Suns last year, Mike, and said, we can do that too. if we have a young stud like Zion Williamson, what if we trade for or sign Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley, basically our Chris Paul, and maybe we can make a run at this thing? I just think what the Phoenix Suns did last year is an anomaly. It is an outlier. And I do not think that the NBA should be trying to do that, replicate that too early with Zion Williamson. So I do look at the New Orleans Pelicans as a really interesting team on draft night, because I think Zion Williamson is making it known that he wants his players, and they have fired two coaches already. I think they're a really interesting team on draft night tonight, especially because of what the Phoenix Suns did with around Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton last year.
Kyle Lowry wants 3 years, $90 million. Where is he going to end up?
I suspect that he'll end up in Philly. I also could see him in New Orleans. I don't see him in LA. Just the cap machinations do not work there. It's going to be very difficult to make that happen. But again, like, how much of this is because Chris Paul ran the table with the Phoenix Suns, and how much of this is just like, hey, this is a smart deal? Like, if Chris Paul gets hurt again in the first round and they don't make that run, our team's going to be clamoring over themselves to get Kyle Lowry or Mike Conley this summer. It's really interesting to see what happens there.
What do you think is going to happen with Duncan Robinson in Miami, given that he, I think, is going to be a free agent next week?
I think if you're the Miami Heat, you have to trust their player development. I mean, Duncan Robinson was a nobody before he came into their program, and I think they're probably betting that they can do that again. Not, no disrespect to Duncan Robinson, but I think the smart play here is to bet on their player development and say, we found Hassan Whiteside. We built up James Johnson. We built up Deion Waiters. In a lot of those cases, they doubled down on that development a little too much and drinking their own Kool-Aid. But with Duncan Robinson, I suspect that they might see if it gets up to that high, the asking price for Duncan Robinson, and say, hey, we're going to keep our powder keg dry until, you know, later on down the road, we're going to need that cap space. And I suspect they're going to bet on their player development.
Betting on your player development and then hitting me rat-a-tat-tat 1-2-3 with Hassan Whiteside, James Johnson, and Deion Waiters made me flinch because of the specifics of those three names that nobody really wants anymore.
Yeah, well, that's when you got to sell high, right? Like, I think when we talk about Pat Riley and Eric Spoelstra and that organization, I think it's amazing that they were able to build up Tyler Johnson into a, you know, $50 million player. But let other people pay that money, right? Like, build them up and then say, all right, go get your money elsewhere. You deserve it.
But they gave all those guys money. They gave all three of those guys money.
A mistake. And yes, Andy Ellisberg, the GM, is a magician turning these cap, you know, albatross contracts into something real and good. But that was a mistake. I think doubling down on that player development and saying, yes, let's overpay and reward our players. Sometimes you just got to sell high. I don't want to leave this interview right here, this segment, without talking about Alperen Şengün. Do you guys know who that is? Do you guys know who that name I just said, Alperen Şengün?
No.
Alperen Şengün is an 18-year-old in the Turkish league that just won MVP, averaged 19-9 and 65% shooting as an 18-year-old. And I think he should go number one. Alperen Şengün is incredible. He is incredibly efficient. People are saying, oh, he's the next Jokic. He's a little shorter. He doesn't have the same, you know, size as Jokic. But man, this dude, his statistical projections are off the charts. Alperen Şengün just turned 19 like the other day. He's kind of in the high lottery, like maybe in the 5 to 10 range. I think he should be going higher than that. Like, I don't know if there's a Zion or an Anthony Davis in this draft, but I love this dude, Alperen Şengün. He does 360 dunks. He does behind the back passes, 18 years old. Like, sign me up to this dude. I'm all about Alperen Şengün. Şengün Hive. Let's go,
man. He sounds delicious. They don't have to re-sign Duncan Robinson. They could also do a sign and trade. You mentioned the names that you mentioned, but Derrick Jones Jr. was a player that they developed, and they ended up using him as a piece, and he ended up getting his deal from another team, and I think they just extended that deal. So that's an option with Duncan Robinson too, no?
Alperen Şengün is amazing. He is like the passing, the touch around the rim. Okay, he's incredible.
All right,
I just want to get it on the record.
Try and get that nickname out there. Keep workshopping what it is that you want to get off the ground. Before we let you go here, anything else super interesting about tonight? The other things to look for that you find super interesting as our one sober basketball expert today?
I think when we talk about prospects, the comps on draft night when they go to the, you know, the Jay Billises of the world or the Kendrick Perkins, I think I saw is on the table tonight in the studio. The comps are out of control. Like the 13th pick is going to be compared to like Michael Jordan, right? Like it is so much fun to watch. I don't blame them because they have to come up with people that people recognize at home. Like, oh, Mo Bamba, what's he like? There was an analyst a few years ago that said Mo Bamba is a hybrid between Anthony Davis and Joel Embiid. And you're just like, come on. You know, I think what we do is like Joe Harris is being a comp for Corey Crispert, right? Is that because his game resembles him, or is it because his hair and his headband resembles Joe Harris? I think there's a lot of just visual profiling that we do with NBA prospects, and I think we need to do better at that.
And finally, we took out vengeance upon Iran after losing to Nigeria, after losing to France. Iran tried to run USA. With our team and 55 USA. Point victory.
USA.
Yes.
USA. USA.
USA. Yes. No question
USA.
There. Just wanted to punctuate the segment that way. Thank you, Haberstroh.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.